Honourable members, let's start the meeting. Apologies for being late in starting this meeting. First of all, welcome to everybody. It's an important meeting in the sense that we have two important agenda items. The first one is the meeting by the Office of the Auditor General on the audit outcomes for the part of the private enterprises for 2012-2013. We had a very successful meeting with the department yesterday on the annual report, two hour long session, where we went in quite the depth on the annual report, including the audit opinion of the auditor general. So we also invited members of the department to sit in into this meeting and to observe. The meeting is primarily for the members of the portfolio committee to interact with the auditor general. The department will be most welcome to participate, but you will not have the second bite of the head. You already have the interaction with the auditor general. And I assume you already all the opinion was public. Had the meeting, ample time to discuss, better understanding why this is public. So we trust that you will participate in that spirit into this meeting. Whenever it is for the auditor general to brief the portfolio. And secondly, it's just a draft report of the budget, BRRR, the budget review recommendation report, which we will see just from the committee. Secretariat, a draft document, work in progress, just to update yourself, get yourself on board, and it will be finalized in the next couple of days. And it will come back to the committee for final approval. And lastly, it's not on your agenda, but there are two sets of minutes that need to be approved. So they will, the new number 5 will be approval of minutes, and number 6 will be closed. But the main item today is the audit agenda to be read. Let me first welcome especially the Auditor General office. First, Carl Bessel. We've worked together before and we know one another in the department. Carl, you're most welcome. Secondly, Valdez Uma, who is from the office. And Samu Nisamad, you're most welcome. But I'm going to ask you anyway to introduce yourself and what role you play in the organization. And then welcome to the department, welcome to the officials from our committee, and also welcome to every member of the committee. Can I ask the auditor general, let's start with you for introduction. Thereafter, members will introduce themselves and lastly the department and other officials.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members, for the opportunity. My name is Carl Wessel. I'm a senior manager for Auditor General and my direct responsibility is responsible for audit of the Department of Public Enterprise.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Carmen Samari. I'm the manager on the audit for SAFCO.
Good morning, members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Waleed Omar. I'm an audit manager and I was responsible for the audit of South African Express.
The members.
Morning. I'm Cash Michael, member of the press.
Morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Member of the portfolio committee. Our chairperson, Mr. Peter Moleleka, is not well. He's put off sick and he's apologized. Okay, let's start with the report.
Good morning, I'm Emmanuel, I'm a director. Good morning, Sunday night, in the Good morning,
Caroline.
My name is Joe Lockwood, I'm from PhD.
Thank you. Yeah, congratulations. Okay, then we should go straight to the Auditor General for your presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. The purpose, I think everybody's got a briefing document, but I'll try to guide through the use of the technology as we've got it. The purpose of this document is to talk about the audit outcomes of the financial year ending 31 March 2012-2013. When we had our one-on-one with the portfolio committee, we also indicated that the committee might have an appetite to look at the audit outcomes for SA Express for the 11-12 financial year, as it hasn't been, the report was only finalized recently and hasn't been brought before the committee by us before. So we've included that for information, and then I'll have to be guided by the committee whether you want us to go through that detail as well, because it ties into the 12-13 results, but the 12-13 results can be dealt with as a standalone issue as well.
We are South African Express.
South African Express.
When does that come to us?
The
22nd. The Express will come to present two annual reports to us. 2011, 2012, or 2012, 2013.
Okay. Then we can deal with both.
Yes.
Which included the vision and the mission statement of the department, and I think this is one of the key departments going forward in the National Development Plan and taking the country forward. I mean, they're the big contributors to the economy, big employers, and I think there's a lot of focus on this portfolio, so I think it's very important our discussion. The portfolio consists of the department and then the eight entities under it. Two of these entities are audited by the Auditor General ourselves, and the remaining six are audited, but not audited by the Auditor General. There's an option for the Auditor General to elect to audit certain entities, and if we don't elect to audit them, then we still interact with the auditor of those entities. So we have annual briefings with these auditors. We discuss that through our general directive. The format of the audit reports that they should use are the things that they want us to cover, or that we want them to audit and look at. So that the audit report in a state-owned entity will look the same if it's audited by the Auditor General or not audited by the Auditor General. And then we also roll these results up into our general report. We've got quarterly interactions with the auditors of these entities and then also with the entities. We attend the audit committee meetings and we're sitting with as observers into the audit committee meetings to get a better understanding of what the entities do and how they operate. The funding for the Department of Public Enterprises on page 8, it increased from the prior year to 1.3 billion rand this year. But the majority of that money was then transferred out to the payment for financial assets to Linnell and Alex Corp throughout the year respectively. And then there was also made a transfer payment was made for an indemnity claim to Linnell, making up the rest of the transfer of the payment that was done in the current year. If we look at the audit opinion history, I think we can see that from the colors green is once again what we all strive for, is the clean audit opinion. A clean audit opinion is what we as the Auditor General consider when we express an unqualified financial opinion with no findings on compliance with all laws and regulations and no findings on predetermined objectives. So the one entity that did achieve it for the current year was Enel. SA Express in the 11-12 years old had a disclaimer, so they've improved from a disclaimer to qualification. There was a regression in the South African Forestry Company. They moved from a clean audit opinion to a qualified audit opinion. We'll deal with the area of qualification below. Alex Corp had an unchanged audit opinion, still findings on compliance with laws and regulations. Broadband was unchanged. Eskom this year also had findings on compliance with laws and regulations in the prior year. And South African Airways, the audit had not been finalized, so we won't be dealing with that in the presentation today.
Excuse me, what are those colors, the green, the yellow, the red?
So if I can point you to the next page, in the middle of the next page, page 7, The green is a qualified, the clean audit opinion. The yellow color is a financially unqualified with findings on predetermined objectives or compliance with laws and regulations. What do we call that? Purple, as it shows up there, is a qualified audit opinion. That means the financial statements were qualified. And then the red is if we got an adverse audit opinion. Or a disclaimer audit opinion. And the gray is then not completed, not finalized yet. Thank you. If we look at the areas for qualification on South African Express, we can see that it relates to, in the current year, to non-current assets. Current assets, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In the prior year, it involved the non-current assets, current assets and liabilities, and other disclosure items. In the SAFCOR environment, we'll get to the details just now that we'll unpack it, what I'm talking about, so that I don't talk accounting. The SAFCOR company was qualified on non-parent assets and expenditure. On predetermined objectives, we had two entities where we had significant findings, and that was on the South African Express and on SAFCOR, where we had significant findings. And in the rest of the portfolio, we found findings on findings where the department and the entities didn't comply with laws and regulations. If we go then to the document, paragraph 2.1, page 7, we have expressed a qualified audit opinion on South African Express. The first item of qualification was the rotable balances. And when we look at rotables are spares that can be reused by the entity. So they use them, they take them off aeroplanes, they put them on aeroplanes again after they sufficiently repaired them. And we found mainly here that there was firstly an issue in the rotables and the inventory, where we struggled to compare the two systems. The system that they use to manage this inventory or the profit these items and the financial system didn't agree. And then we also requested management from prior year to go back and to revisit the recalculation of the depreciation on these items. And when we tested it, we couldn't agree to the figures that they've got. So we had to qualify the entity on that item. On inventory...
So what year did you use to test?
Let me just try and understand what you mean, sir. So we look at when we test the balances on year end, we see whether we can firstly satisfy ourselves that, you know, we've got all the documentation to make sure that the value of those items are correctly. So we look for invoices and things like that. Secondly, we look at whether everything at year end that is on hand is accounted for in the books. And we look at then, if you look at your depreciation, you must look at the lifespan of these items. So to see whether what you've got and how long it's been used and how long it all can be used has been taken to account.
Yeah, so would you expect that I tell you
As part of the auditing, we also get expertise if we require them. So we do take note of what the member has mentioned. I think it's a very valuable point. On the inventory, at the year end, we did a stock count with management. What we came up and what was eventually published in the financial statements, we had differences between the valuation of stock, between what was in the financial statements at year end versus what we counted. Management applied a roll forward basis, so they said it's from the previous year, what did we acquire, what did we sell, and got to a theoretical figure. But when we went through the physical count, we disagreed with what was on hand at year end in terms of the inventory space. Now, as a result, the third qualification comes in. As a result of your assets and your useful life of assets, there's always a difference between accounting treatment and the taxation treatment. But due to there are differences in the qualification that we've issued on inventory and the rentable, we've also got a concern about the deferred tax assets that management has created. Now, this is a very technical area in terms of accounting. But as a result of the above, we couldn't satisfy ourselves that this value was accurately reflected in the financial statement. Then also an area of concern, I think the new Provincial Procurement Policy Framework Act came into effect for all entities with the start of 8 December 2012. And the entities therefore have to apply the Provincial Procurement Policy Framework Act. It differs from what the entity did in the past. In the previous years, they had to comply with their own procurement regulations. Now the framework and the legislation is very prescriptive of how they need to deal with it. So the entity, we found that the entity has disclosed that they didn't have the necessary systems to identify irregular expenditure. And that to us is a concern in itself. If you don't know what it is, you've got an unknown quantity. So we base the qualification on that. And then also ICRAS structures. The ICRAS structures are held in the names of trusts. Now, in order to finalize the statement for the SA Express Group, the trusts have to sign off their financial statement. Now, currently, the trustees that are on the trust have come and gone. It's not the actual trustees. So they've been changed into trustees, and due to the legislative process of registering these trustees, that has not taken place yet. So those financial statements couldn't be finalized yet, and therefore couldn't be signed off, and therefore couldn't be consolidated into the express financial statement. And so therefore, that aircraft structure also caused us to write a qualification in that regard. So then we move on to the South African Forestry Company. South African Express, the Forestry Company, SAFCOP. What happened when we started looking at the biological assets, which is really in the subsidiary in Mozambique? They applied a technique of trying to now physically count and map the trees according to the physical areas that they had on record. And during this process, differences were identified between the physical areas and what they had on record and the number of trees that they had. And therefore, the auditors of the entity couldn't express an opinion on those biological assets. And as that is a huge chunk of Safco assets, we also couldn't express an appropriate audit opinion. So therefore, also qualify the value of that. The process is underway. I think this will be finalized towards the end of 2013, so it's highly likely that this issue will be resolved when the next financial statements come around for the next financial year. Also, Tepo also had an instance where they were not very careful about what they claimed from the tax man when they bought things and when they paid for goods and services. They claimed 100% of their expenditure for VAT purposes, and when SARS started looking at the information, they discovered that some of the stuff was not, you couldn't claim input tax on it. Now, they could determine the amount, but due to the accounting system, they couldn't go back and write it back to the individual line items on the income statement, what is it called, now, comprehensive statement of financial performance, the income statement, all back to it. So they just had a one line that said abnormal loss, the 9.6 million rand. Now that distorts the individual line items, and therefore we also expressed an audit opinion, a qualified audit opinion, qualification on that item. In the next financial year, that shouldn't affect anything because it's now gone into the accumulated profit reserve and that item will move away. Then the last one is capital profit and retirement fund reserve. Now, with the change to the new IFR, in the International Financial Reporting Standards, it doesn't allow for reserve accounting. Now, in the past, the entity had a retirement fund reserve, a distributable reserve, and a capital profit reserve. Now, that's not the new, the new financial statement doesn't allow you to deal with these in that way. You've got to put them somewhere else. So, in the next financial year, that issue should also be corrected. Then if we go to point 2.2, sorry, I haven't kept up with the technology, I do apologize on this. In the previous year, if I express, we express a disclaimer of opinion. Now the disclaimer was based on two things, it was a limitation of scope, or it was basically the limit based on the limitation of scope. So we couldn't get adequate evidence. Now the main reason for disclaimer was the previous year. Because the previous year was a disclaimer in 10-11, a lot of those limitations still remain in the 11-12 financial year, and I think we can see that things are moving the right way in the 12-13 financial year, where we've gone down to a qualification. So we've now moved it from an area where it's so pervasive, there are so many items that were affected in the 11-12 years that we couldn't express an opinion, to the 12-13 where we could express an item, an opinion, with the exception of items that we've spoken about. If we quickly run through these items, the property, plant and equipment, the same story as we rated with the Roosevelt. We couldn't agree what they've got there. We couldn't find adequate proof of what they stated in the financial statements, property, plant and equipment. On inventories, once again, the same story, the rights and obligations and the valuation of the inventory, we couldn't expect an opinion on that. We couldn't get the adequate documentation for that. Due to the fact, also non-current assets held for sale, that is assets that the entity intends to dispose of. They put them in a separate category on the financial statement and they're supposed to dispose of them. But due to the issues we had on property, plant and equipment and inventory, if we can't express an opinion on those balances, we struggle to express an opinion on the inventory of the non-current assets held for sale because they come from that inventory base and that property, plant and equipment base. On the investment in the Congo Express, we couldn't find adequate documentation to understand the extent of the loss that SA Express is responsible for. On the trade and other receivables, we couldn't find adequate documentation relating to the trade payables. The majority of this amount related to tax on ticket sales. So we couldn't find proof that they actually owed this to somebody. For the trade and other payables, we couldn't find adequate documentation to say to whom is this money owed, the taxes on the ticket sale, and in the current year it was written back that payable. Going back to E, the main item here was maintenance reserve. Now this is where it's like your vehicle when you buy a maintenance plan. The entity has paid for a maintenance plan on the aeroplane, and then during that year they wrote off 2/3 of that maintenance plan. And we couldn't find adequate proof of why the 2/3 had been written back or written. And then once again, old taxman comes in, if I can't do the rest, I can't do the taxman part. So we also weren't happy with the taxation effect. Then it just compounds. If we go to the paragraph on profit of sale, if we don't know what the tax or the value or the cost of the property, plant and equipment and inventory is, then we don't know whether the profit of the sale is correct once the items are sold. Irregular expenditures and wasteful expenditure, we've spoken about the entity doesn't have systems in place to identify irregular expenditure. And once again, we've raised the issue on aircraft structure, which is the same in the previous year. The trustee is not being finalized, financial statements not being able to. And then we say, when you, furthermore, that we had, we apply a materiality figure where we say if certain things are mislated more than this amount, it is an automatic qualification if you don't fix it. Then we also look at smaller amounts that we identify, we read the identified errors, and we say, hang on now, if we start adding up all these little errors together, it also makes us uncomfortable and we can't express an opinion on those items. So there were further errors that we identified on intangible assets. This was for internally generated assets. This was the software that the entity developed. There are certain strict criteria in the financial statement that says you must hit the following tick marks and boxes if you want to capitalize this amount. We couldn't find and we couldn't satisfy ourselves that this met the criteria as set in the financial statement, and therefore we felt also that the capitalization of that was wrong. The intangible assets, we've identified the second bullet under there, that the incorrect amortization, applied the incorrect amortization rate in the past, and the entity disclosed it as a change in accounting estimate, and it should have been disclosed as a prior period error. Also accounting differences. Repairs and maintenance, if anything, included in the operating expenditure statement, that that's on the disclosure item, so it's wrong disclosure of that item. And the other income reflected, we also couldn't get adequate documentation of what the other income should have been in the previous year. If we move over to the next page, paragraph 2.3, I think I already emphasized, but I need to emphasize more. The emphasis on that paragraph, members, that's something that the directors and or the accounting officer has already disclosed in the financial statement. So it's not us putting a limitation or issuing a qualification on any item. This is something that's been disclosed, and we want to draw the readers of our audit report's attention to that. If they go, please go have a look there. There's something very important that you need to know while you read this information. In Alex Court, they identify surplus and wasteful expenditure, and it's disclosed in 034, and we bring the user's attention to the disclosure of that fact. In SA Express, there was material impairment. That means that inventory has been written down. So the value that they had, and after year-end, we found either that inventory couldn't be found or that the value had dropped so significantly that they need to write the value of this down. And it was a 20 million rand in this year. In the previous year, paragraph 3.343, we issued an emphasis of matter paragraph on the financial sustainability of SA Express and mentioned the guarantee that was provided by the shareholder or the National Treasury and the shareholder. Also, we mentioned that there were material payments in the previous year also to property, plants and equipment and intangible assets. So once again, talking about our favorite friends, the rotables and the intangible assets. Under additional matters, this is also areas where we want to focus the user's attention on, where we have to, in terms of our standards, let the user know of certain things. Like in Tascal's case, we changed auditors in this year. The previous year was done by a private audit firm, and in the current financial year, well, not the current, the 12-13 financial year, was the first year that the auditor general was the auditor of Tascal. Then similar suit with SA Express in the prior year. We were also the first time that we were the auditors in from the 11-12 financial year, the auditor general. He took over from another entity. Then as the auditor general, I think the committee is familiar, we report certain areas of focus that we look at. And if we look at this portfolio and go back to the start, there was only two entities that had significant findings of predetermined objectives. But we also felt it's important to bring to the attention of the committee is the fact of the achievement of targets by the entity. Because I think once your housekeeping, and that's what I call the financial part of the organization, your financial and your compliance procedures and everything should support your business. If you spend extended time on your housekeeping, you are not going to get to the rest of your business. If your CFO is intensely involved in clearing audit issues up to the last minute, I think, colleague, we signed off SA Express.
Which one?
The 12-13 year, very late, now recently. That's all the same story. You're 6 months into the next financial year. If you're still working on issues, that means you're lagging behind in the new financial year. You spend 6 months working on prior year issues where you could have worked on. So we need to get the housekeeping clean, and then we get to predetermined objectives. And I think it's a reflection in the portfolio that there's a lot of entities where the targets weren't achieved. Which then becomes another issue, because if we look at service delivery, this is what we have to do as government. No. I just want to. This is actually my big feat. I didn't anticipate doing it as early. Thanks. If we look at the portfolio, we'll see now there are three areas that need cleanup. The one is predetermined objective is fairly clean, but we're talking about the achievement of targets, which has become a real focus. If we look at it, we're going to talk about it now. The other area is where the material adjustments to the financial statements after it was submitted to the auditors for auditing. Now that means we form part of the assurance process. Whatever is given by management, we audit and we find errors in it, and then management corrects, so the final figures are published correctly. So if we clean that up, with that, and then the supply chain management, which will touch on the irregular expenditure and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we're sitting in a whole different situation. And the theme is there in the portfolio. It's the material adjustment to the financial statements and the focus on supply chain management that really needs to be the concern and the effort for the portfolio. And material adjustment to the financial statements is we're sitting with expertise in the portfolio. We're sitting with entities with unqualified audit opinions on assets, on inventory. They are sharing buildings. We're looking at the Transnet, the Eskom, that manage these issues. And if we come to the commitments and the recommendations we've made to ministers, we'll see that ministers started moving the direction of sharing knowledge. At the end of the day, we want government. We want structure. As much as we want to work in our silos, we need to look at our fellow entities. Does that answer your question, member? So on the predetermined objective, like we say, this is not a finding. This is nearly almost like an additional matter. I draw your attention to the fact that the entities have disclosed that they haven't achieved all their targets. Falling in this category was the Department of Public Enterprises. When we come to ETA Express, we did two parts of, I split my predetermined objective audit into two parts. The first part is we look at the planning side of things. And on ETA Express, we had a problem with the usefulness of the indicators, of the targets and the indicators set. Now we say, when you don't define your targets and your indicators well, you're going to struggle to measure that performance. So if your planning side is, you've got a problem in your planning side, then you're also going to have a problem on reporting at the end of the day. And I think it's not a direct correlation, it speaks to the non-achievement of planned targets as well. Because the idea is that you've got this plan predetermined before you start with the year. You start monitoring on a quarterly basis, and where you see you falling behind, you implement corrective action so that you can address the shortcomings and see that you achieve your targets at year end. So that was the case for SA Express for both the 2012 and 2013 and 2011-2012 financial years. SA Express also had material adjustments to the predetermined objective, so that means what they initially provided with us and what we found during audit, they made adjustments to that report to get what you're seeing now. On SAPL, we also had issues with the reliability of the key performance indicators, so that once again, on the planning side of things didn't go well. The criteria or the targets weren't smart or well-defined or specific. Then you're also going to have the issue of the achievement of targets. So once again, if you're unsure about what you're planning, the results are going to be different. Broadband Infraco, also we had an issue on the achievement of targets. Eskom and Concert. So that's a good number of the entities. As we're talking, I think as we've indicated and we've talked about, the next focus area is supply chain management, which we look at, I think, which is always a hot potato in government. And this year, like we say, the biggest change in the entity environment is that the preferential policy, procurement policy framework act came into existence. The irony here is that this requirement has been there for some time. It's been postponed the implementation on public entities for a good 18 months. So it wasn't as if it was suddenly sprung upon everybody. It was postponed for a period of 18 months and then brought into effect on the 8th of December 2012. So the entities should have been aware of this change in the legislation. On SA Press, we found that sufficient appropriate audit evidence cannot be obtained that goods and services were procured through a procurement process which is fair, equitable, and transparent and competitive. But I think that also reflected in the director's statement that I don't know how to identify irregular expenditure. So if you don't have the documentation, you're not going to be able to detect it, and you're not going to be able to report on it. TASCO, same story, goods and services not procured through a process that was fair, equitable, and transparent. On Alexcor, I think Alexcor always has got a very unique situation. The pooling and sharing joint venture went through a procurement process and signed contracts with the mining contractors, to start contracts with the mining contractors. Now, as the joint venture is an entity created by law and not a registered company or any other legal form as we recognize the entity, the contractors didn't want to enter the agreements with the joint venture. Therefore, Alexcor signed the contracts with these contractors. Now, that was because the joint venture is not a public entity, they don't have to comply with the PSMI. So their procurement process wasn't based on PSMI or the Preferential Policy Procurement Policy Framework Act, and as a result, that process was irregular. And now, Alexcor signed the contract, I think, so they inherited this error from the joint venture. I think we've spoken long and hard, but I think this is going to be a tough one still to crack, is what is the venture going to be, the joint venture? Because I think that's the essence of the matter, is without a legal form or a recognized legal status, you know, you're always going to sit with issues of how you deal with it in terms of Alexcor and how you deal with it in terms of the joint venture. On broadband Infraco, we also had issues with the procurement processes. We put two contracts were awarded based on pressure points that were not calculated in accordance with the requirement of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. And Eskom also had issues with the procurement in terms of the Triple PSA Act. I think this is a good area where entities can also come to the department and places like that who have implemented these processes. It's a known quantity. Once you train your officials, I mean, all these entities have got people looking at managing their claims with places like NAVSA, places like the Equalization Fund, and all of these places that the entities carefully manage. The procurement area is something absolutely solvable with the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. If you do it right, you train your people, there's no reason for them not to adhere and not to clean up this environment in the next financial year. The next focus area, as I indicated previously to the member, is this material misstatement to the financial statement. I think the first item here is an unfamiliar item, is on the department, where we identified that there were misstatements in the key management personnel, contingent liabilities, and investments. On the key management personnel, what happened there is that there was an incorrect PAFSOL report. PAFSOL is a payment system that the department used to pay their employees, and from this they draw certain information to populate their financial statements. Now they use an incorrect report for key management personnel, that is your people on senior management services and higher, that they disclose as a separate note in the financial statement. The second one was on contingent liabilities. This is a claim relating to the Kumasiland, the privatization of the sale of the Kumasiland forest. And I think that is the majority of what TASCO owns. Third party has been suing the minister for stepping away from the sale. There was a process followed by the department where a settlement was agreed with the lawyers of the entity, and the submission was made to the minister to be signed off. But when we spoke to the legal representative of the department, he indicated to us that the third-party entity said that their lawyers didn't have the mandate to do that, so they didn't agree with the settlement. So there was, in fact, no settlement on the table, so this item couldn't have been removed from the financial statement. And the last one was when we looked at the investment, we sent out third-party confirmation. And when we got back, there was two issues on it. There was The department is supposed to do annual revaluation of what the investment is. The pure simple of it is, in government books, we don't do the complex group accounting where we look at what the net asset value is and we bring in all the financial. We purely look at what was paid to these entities. Then you must look later, are there any indicators to see that what you have paid is worth less now? And then you must compare that entity. And I'm under correction, it was when we sent out all broadband, the valuation was lower and there had to be an impairment for broadband. And also when we started looking at the agreement for broadband that was signed with the entity, there was a portion that they disclosed as a loan to DPE, and DPE disclosed this as an investment. So there was a discrepancy in that, and the department had to then adjust their financial statements to take this amount also out of the investment and show it then as something else. And I think this year we got two comments, and the CFO, please if I'm wrong, when we talk to this with both sides, we take our process to National Treasury, and the department goes and sees National Treasury. The National Treasury representative replied back to the CFO and said, this is really interesting. We haven't catered for this in our framework yet. We're sitting in uncharted water here. So if we look at these issues, I believe that it is one of issues, it's solvable issues. There are, I think we've spoken also to Gigi, it's silo issues, you know. We need to step out, and I said it as a committee, as another committee yesterday, as management in an entity, we need to realize that all of us are touched by the financial processes here in. You know, if you're doing and you're reporting something on human resources, get human resources involved and ask them to sign off and verify that the information is correct. Were you sitting with your own legal representative when you're doing the legal, the contingent liabilities for litigation and claims? He should have his input into that area to say whether he agrees with the removal. I mean, 4.6 billion rand is quite a significant amount to suddenly drop in your financial statement. And on the investment, the entity will have a good measures in place to value the investment at year-end. On SIA Press, financial statement, there were also material adjustments in the non-current assets, the current assets and disclosure items identified by the auditors and corrected by the entity. Tackle material mistakes in non-current assets, current assets, liabilities identified by the auditors. Alex Corp had material adjustments to the property, plant and equipment and food service and wasteful expenditure. Broadband Infraco had material adjustments. So if we look at this, quite a number of instances. So this is a real focus. And we found that the entity that traditionally gets right, if you look at your Transnet, your Eskom, and even some of the other entities that I've worked with, is these entities put a lot of emphasis on doing financial statements more regularly. I think Transnet even goes as far as having the quarterly results verified by the auditors. So you're sitting in a situation where you're sitting with up-to-date correct information. So you know your decisions made on the correct information at the right time, and it also builds up a discipline. The more you do things, the better you get it. So if you can have a massive exercise at year end of something that is possibly contentious or possibly technically difficult, you run the risk of having errors. So what we've recommended to some of the entities, and it also comes through the recommendations, is that they do this regular full financial reporting. Because National Treasury also requires the department to do quarterly reporting, but they don't require all the disclosure notes to be done as part of this process. So once again, those items that we talked about are one-off items. They're being done once a year. So also you need to get into that habit, into that mindset of doing it more regularly. And then also getting internal audit or some kind of review assurance involved in these processes to know that what you're getting is accurate. If we're moving on to other material non-compliance, we'll see here that we're talking about an SAX for 2012, 2013 and 11-12. The entity didn't have adequate processes in place to prevent and detect fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. I think it came out now three times: the qualification, the supply chain issues, and then the pure compliance with the PFMA that says you must have processes in place to prevent and detect it. SAFCO, they submitted their financial statements later in the prescriptive 2 months after financial year end to us. And also issue on expenditure management that ties into the supply chain management environment. Aleco Expenditure Management, I enjoy the future of rightful expenditure. Transit as well, reported fruitless and rightful and irregular expenditure in the financial statements that hadn't prevented it. If we look at our drivers of key control, now these are our really simplified version of looking at things. We're looking at things of the involvement of leadership. Now leadership is usually more accounting authority or accounting officer. And the processes they put in place, or the financial and performance management, the second category there on top, is your daily discipline. Now I think if we agree that these areas, if you do it often enough, regular enough, it is areas that you can clean up quickly. Areas that you can address. So that's why there's a lot of yellow there under leadership, under financial management, and then under the governance processes, we had issues with risk management, internal audit, and audit committee. But I think with express turbulent past, you know, if you go into all these other things, you struggle to focus as the business on hand. On the other matters of interest that we also bring to the attention of the committee, we report on the incurring of fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the financial year. And we report also on there's been a minor increase, but the increase in fruitless and wasteful expenditure by Transnet. And then regular expenditure, there's been a slow increase in some of them. And then Eskom and Transnet had significant increases in the irregular expenditure. Then also we report on whether there are any investigations ongoing on page 35 of the entity. That we also disclose and bring to the attention of the users. There's an investigation at SA Express on the risk and compliance division at SA Express into alleged incident of financial misconduct. That's called, there was an investigation conducted by an independent firm. The investigation was initiated on allegations of misappropriation of assets by employees of the subsidiary of entity. The investigation resulted in criminal proceedings being instituted against the employees. So on broadband, the acting CEO committed the investigation to assess compliance with procurement and contract management based on findings from internal audit. All awarded contracts exceeding 10 million were included in the scope of the investigation. The portion of the investigation related to non-compliance has been concluded, and they've taken relevant disciplinary actions against the employee. Next item is on Eskom. During the year, the group initiated investigations into irregularities and fraud within the procurement and asset management environment. No material findings were identified, and those investigations were complete during the year, and there were still investigations on those. Then, ladies and gentlemen, we come to an interesting paragraph. When we look at the different assurance providers in the process, now to put it, make really simple analogy, a simple correlation my English is lacking. Okay. We look at the audit outcomes for the portfolio, and then we look at the influence of the different role that they have, and then we look at the movement of these audit outcomes. So if we look at the portfolio, there is an improvement, but we're still in the yellow environment. So we're saying that if we feel currently from all assurance providers, if we're getting some assurance that we're moving towards the right direction. The actions of everybody involved in monitoring the action plans, monitoring the entities, are having a definite effect on them. But I think if we can move them to the green, to clean audit opinions without any findings, then we can start to see this portfolio going to green to get to the assurance provided. And then we can really focus on service delivery. On the last slide that we've got, on the last page, we talk about commitments. With our interactions with the oversight bodies, with yourselves and with the ministers, we try and get certain commitments on improving the audit opinion of the entity. Now, we look at the first one that we got there is the focus on the sustainability of the clean audit and clean administration audit deleted by example for the state-owned companies. And we're saying that one is still in progress. Because of the results on entities like TASCO, SA Express, the findings of the compliance laws and regulations environment, we feel that is still a commitment that really needs to focus on. But if you look at our new commitment that we'll get to now, the Minister has put in really strong measures to address the findings. And then one thing that the minister has also started is that there's a group or there's meetings between the minister and the CEOs and the audit committee chairpersons of the different entities to get the people around the table to start talking about how they can resolve issues and how they can assist each other. Then also, the third one there on the left, BP and SOC to prepare interim financial statements subject to an interim audit. So that's more regular financial reporting, building up we're going to autopilot. You know, you should be doing these things on autopilot. You shouldn't take a huge input or a huge effort at year end. You should be used to the financial disciplines of the determined objective, and then you get an external confirmation. Then also we said something that we find very useful is when we sit in on the quarterly or the audit committee meetings of the entities, you know, we pick up a lot of information and we privy to a lot of information a lot sooner than what it hits the media. And we recommend strongly to the department that they also consider this. I know the department sees it as probably could touch on their independence, you know, and that you're there. But we're sitting there purely as observers from the auditor general side. And the entities have welcomed us in that role. They've even given us some homework in that regard. We made the questions around TSMA. It's a simple thing that we take for granted, that we work in an environment that we're comfortable with, that the entity and their auditors are not necessarily that comfortable with. So it's a nice way of being up to date with relevant information. Then also all the entities to provide the DPE with action plans and progress made to address the audit funding to achieve clause 10 audits for every year. So they're going to report on a quarterly basis to DPE to say how they are doing to address their findings and what processes they've been put in place. And then also internal audit to implement process to review action taken by entities to improve the audit outcome. The minister has actually written a letter on the last three, or the interim financial statements, the action plans, and the review by internal audit to ask the entities to do that, so the DPE gets that assurance from the entity that they'll achieve the audit. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Report by the auditor general. Do you want to add?
Yeah, that's comments on progress that Mr. Express has made with level drop. As you know, the audits were already closely combined, drop 13 from the shortly after 11th issue. We must say that there has been an improvement in the audit outcome from the same audit opinion to a qualification. As you know, in terms of the hierarchy of audit opinions, obviously the end goal will be to get the green goal. We have an unqualified opinion, the clean audit outcome basically. But we know that staff management has taken steps to greatly improve their asset management in particular by conducting, for instance, the stock on the 5th of March, which we attended. Unfortunately, wasn't the result of the stock was not applied as we would have expected it to have been applied, as Carlo indicated in the qualification paragraph. But nonetheless, there are steps which have been taken. As another example, fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure policy has now been approved by the accounting authority, being the board. And that is, I understand from my discussion with management, that that will be rolled out for the 13-14. So we would then be expected to see irregular expenditure being identified and reported and disclosed.
Thank you.
On your
side?
In terms of that calling, as you can see on the chart of the opinion throughout the year, it has always received clean opinions and then suddenly it fell into qualification territory. The qualifications are matters that are raised during the year and are matters that can be solvable, and they are in the process of implementing the action plans to solve the problem. So we do anticipate that for qualification, the matters that have been given should have gone up.
Members, please open it for discussion and comments. Honorable Prima, Honorable Tabolo, Honorable Tabolo.
Thank you very much. Really empowering. A few good points. Number one, what is the MOD? What is the net asset value shock? And I'll tell you what I feel about that. The next one is
as you probably know, that they actually lied to the authorities. They made fools of us. And that's why invocation that you should come in and then get in the system and sort it out. Like on top. That's a very, very short thing, and I think this was the end of the story. And we got a very serious one, board, the whole board of a state-owned company to give a straight face, come to Parliament, present the board, and lie through their teeth. And I feel very pissed here because we qualified them. Someone was up on his own wonderful service and his death. And the Lord and behold, the wind of the Lord has come up. And the rest is tradition. Now, linked to that, Heaven and Mr. Rafferty and Martin, the God finished to come on board in the forensic aspect. It was apparent it was in the audit version, but then because of the problem in the forensic liability and people of what you have responsible, the government that can only happen in the forensic dimension.
Why you are there? I don't know, maybe you'll assist me how we strike a balance there. Because, like I say, you saw this objective from the first one. At the time that the annual equipment plan was approved. That's something very variable. So, 9 months down the line or 10 months down the line, I'm going to qualify this person. But I'm sitting there. I don't know. The second question relates to now those that are measurable, non-achievement of the predetermined objective. I think somebody said 2%, somebody said 8%, and I submit it means achievement is very slow. When you raise the red flag and say no, up to your country, as the aim to say this is too much. The last 20% is actually I'm calling for education. Maybe I'm missing something when it comes to this term that we use, particularly as it relates to irregular expenses. Non-disclosure may lead to embezzlement. In other words, SAG, I've seen irregular expenditure that was not disclosed. So I'm reporting on it. Now, I hear a new one where I say, because there are no systems, I can't tell whether there is any irregular expenditure or not. In other words, you don't know as Solicitor General, but you suspect there might be. If that is the case, wouldn't it therefore lead to a disclaimer rather than an emphasis of letter for me, like my understanding, I may be wrong, but I'm not sure. Emphasis of letter may mean there is irregularity and the entity has not disclosed. But if I don't know, there's just a foreign thing. I say, I'm not going to express an opinion on things that I don't know. If I'm understanding wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. On your grid that you've given us, one of the things that is causing public enterprises which you concern is public record keeping. Now, to me, that causes more than just a great deal of concern. Creates a sense of panic when a department such as public enterprises is calling an auditor general to assess this mark of a proper record keeping. Now, you say that you're going to have intervention. What kind of intervention are we talking? Are we talking training? Are we talking people being held responsible? I just need to know what kind of intervention you're planning. And then with South African Airways, and this is more when we seek guidance for auditor general, which I should remember, you are the accountant and you're the experts in this field, we are simply politicians. How do we exercise our oversight on SAA when we have absolutely nothing to go on from the Auditor General side? How do you suggest we take this forward? Because I know that it's something that concerns me, but I know it concerns everyone in the committee. Is how do we exercise our oversight duties when SAA don't have an audit report? Also, in general, on your grid, the thing that causes, well, the area that causes the most concern for the Auditor General is the financial and performance management. That has the most number of, excuse me for being crude, but your yellow block. Now, quite frankly, when submitting reports to the Auditor General, one would expect that the financial performance management was under control. And sort of none of the entities show that it's under control, and that's very, very worrying. How are we going to fix it? How do we get the portfolio committee? Who do we put pressure on? Where are we putting pressure? To make sure that it doesn't fix itself. Then also, I find it bizarre that an entity would dare to submit their report late to Auditor General. And there I would refer specifically to Sackle, who you said submitted 2 months late. Now, let's be honest, there's a couple of people in this world that you don't irritate, and one of them is the Auditor General. And I think there's such a lack of leadership and just general care for your country to submit your forms in late to the Auditor General. Who do we blame for that? and what action is taken against those people, because that is absolutely unacceptable. There's also something that I found very strange, and again, I'm going to counsel, so please explain it to me. How is it possible that we allow people to change things once they submit to these things? Because, let me tell you, once I submit myself to SARS, and SARS has got my e-submission, that is because it's very fishy if I come back and I go, wait, hold on, you might not like this and you might not like that, so let me just quickly change things around it. Why do they change things? Do you inform them that there's a problem that needs to be fixed, or do they, because they've rushed the submission through to you, then come back at a later stage and start to mend things? And I'm sorry if my question sounds crude, but I'm not in counsel, so I need to know from your side, you know, why that happens. Shall we think?
Just from my side, one of the issues in each column, the last column has recommendations. I assume that those recommendations go to the entity or the fund. So what? What happens with that? Do you monitor the recommendation? So for instance, to reflect, it expects to implement the formal policy and procedure addressing the process and requirements and how do you follow it up? Is it a recommendation you leave to them? What is the golden thread going through with your recommendation? Because I find that is the most valuable column. If I'm an entity and the Auditor General comes with a recommendation, how to correct it? I just want to, how does it roll out? What is the step for you to make sure that specific entity does give attention to your recommendation? And it doesn't get lost in we back to square one when we come back. Secondly, on page 33, your column of colors is very interesting. That gives you a bird's eye view. But there's only one red block. And the red block is the DBE. And it's about drivers of internal control. And more specifically, proper record keeping for financial and performance management. And the red block means intervention required. Now, I assume that intervention is by the department, by DBE. Mm. Now, in that intervention, what is your role as an Auditor General to assist the department to get rid of the red block? Because you can't leave it to them alone to do it. My third question, you spoke on page 21 about the legal status regarding Alex Corp. From your side, is there any steps that we as a legislator need to take? Is the act required for Alex Corp? If you say the legal status is in question. And lastly, maybe it's not a fair question, but I do want to answer it. And that is the triple P website. I'm not sure, and it seems to me in your presentation, it is more of a concern to ESOP. I don't know if it's wider in state-owned companies or only in ESOP, but the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. So in the recommendation you say they must ensure immediate compliance with any changes in the regulation of PFM, can you just enlighten the committee? Because we probably will have to discuss with National Treasury and with the department what is the issue about the triple P. But from your perspective, what are the issues? We were a member, it's a 2000 Act, if I remember correctly. Yeah, 85 of 2000. Then there were certain exemptions which ended in December 2012. Now we in October 2013. Just indicate us about the trouble we need. Thank you. Can we ask a brief response?
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question was on the net asset value of that call leading then to a follow-up question, if I understand. Remember? The net asset value was 3.1 billion, right? 3.1 billion. The net asset value.
The bank account, I think.
The three.
Majority is
the majority is.
I assume that he takes the killing and blame the reign of the land on which those three are calling. That is actually the impetus of my question. You see, because it's like asking you what is the reign of the house. You might just say that brick and mortar and this was stuck again and stood in the land only the house finished.
So I just might leave myself with more room for some land building.
Can I still answer the question? When they value the biological assets, it's a very complex methodology. But however, they don't value the trees alone because the trees are connected to the land. So they value the business as a whole. So they don't say land is 5 billion, trees is 4 billion. They value the business. So the land that the trees are on are valued as part of the value of the biological assets.
I gradually accept.
Before we, thank you for the kind words from the committee, you know, from the members of the committee. We try and be a partner in this process, and we also value these interactions. The next question was on when do we become involved in forensic investigations? Maybe here we just have to take a step back. The responsibility to conduct investigations and investigation alleged irregularities lies with the accounting officer and accounting authority of the entity. So unless specifically asked to conduct the investigation, we receive a request from an entity or the general notice to conduct investigation. We do not oversee or interfere with that investigation process. What we do as part of our audit process, we do obtain the report in this regard, so we do go through the report. Also, the result of forensic investigations is to determine whether there was any liability or misconduct or irregularities through the process, willing or unwillingly. And then the accounting authority and accounting officer need to determine culpability, whether someone should be responsible in the case of irregular expenditure and fruitless and waste expenditure, whether that should be recovered from a third party or someone internally in the organization, and then the appropriate steps should be taken. But as part of the audit process, we do take cognizance of these requests and we look at it and we see whether this could influence the financial statement and the opinion that we express, and whether there are any other risk areas we should take concern or should note concern. I don't know if that answers the question. On the PFMA is only applicable to public entities and departments. Everything published in the PFMA. But when a new entity is created, the usual process is followed is that both National Treasury and the Department of Public Service Administration, so that the Public Service Act should be involved in the creation of any new entity. And this is the process. Remember, as we think if we take a step back, the joint venture was created through a court order from a land claim that was done on the ground. So that was not through the normal processes that you would go about as an entity or as a government department of setting up a new entity. So I think the truth is here, we should use Alex Corner as an example, you know. Can we take that forward and how do we approach Treasury? Because we've recommended to the entity since we started with our engagement, speak to Treasury about this, get the entities involved, and now let's try to get backwards. But it's very difficult to now fight the deed of settlement which goes Alex Court currently and get it into line with the PFMA compliance entity. Because the community doesn't want to know anything about fiat money. They've got a big legal opinion that they spat the auditors with earlier that saying we do not have to apply to the FMA. So, as talking about SAFCOR and where we want to go with SAFCOR is, we know the issues with AlexCorp. Let's do it the right way around this. Okay, so look at the measures of establishing a joint venture, because I'm sure there would be thoughts about this going forward. How are we going to proactively involve National Treasury, the department, and DPSA into getting this these entities established so that we're proactive about it? If we know that this is going to happen, it's going to be shame on us until we wait for a court to assign that responsibility, because you're going to sit with another joint venture in as an eligible case. So there's three departments that you have to involve currently, according to the Public Service Act. National Treasury, DPSA, and then obviously the department should be the leader in this one.
Sorry, Carl, this is a few changes. Can you also respond to some of the concerns about the alleged lies that management of SA Express or the board expressed in the Parliament? I'm not going to comment.
It's not alleged. Creation lies, that's right, the report reaction was wrong.
Just from our perspective, our responsibility is in regards to forensic investigation, to get a report from the accounting authority, to review the reasons why forensic investigation was requested. And essentially the reasons it was requested was from the board itself, to look into the alleged irregularities around the financial reporting, so amounts which were reported in the previous financial statements. The response to the forensic report led to conduct a reconstruction of the national service for 2010-2011. And because the auditors, the previous auditors, were not able to get to a conclusion about whether those reconstructed amounts were accurately valid and complete, the resulting opinion was a disclaimer. This then carried forward to the 11th top financial report, where we agreed, basically, with the previous auditors.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
On the ARPO, we started with the initiative as the Auditor General where we're starting looking at the next financial year's predetermined objective to determine, just as a member said, whether it's smart, whether it's well-defined up front. The ideal situation that we recommend to entities, because it creates a difficult timing issue, you've got to be responsible for it. The submission time of this to Parliament or to the Portfolio Committee for considerations is usually February, March. Now, the idea would be you give yourself enough time to develop this, you submit it to internal audit, which has got the capability and the capacity to tear this thing apart, if I can use those terms, and say to you what's wrong with it. Because you can sit and you can focus on it. There's also very good guidance. There's a half a page of document that I describe to all my entities that tells you, what's the purpose of this indicator or the target? How do I measure it? Who's responsible for it? How often do I collect it, and what's the data that I need to collect, and how do I make sure that this data is correct? What's the implication if this indicator is not achieved? What's it going to mean for my business? And so it's about 10 questions. Sounds very simple. I always get to the guy, I get away with it a lot, and I tell this to people because it sounds very simple. But if you put your mind to it, you've really interrogated that target or that indicator, and you've really applied your mind to what needs to be done. In our presentation that we've done in some of the portfolio committees, it's very important also when you've got these targets and these indicators that you also include it in your balance scorecard or whatever they use as a performance card, your individual performance contract, and you roll it down to the different levels of staff so that everybody knows what their responsibility and that responsibility feeds into the achievement of targets. So to go back, given the time when you prepare your AOPO, your predetermined objective, your APP, have the internal audit interrogated and audited, because they've got this expertise and they've got the knowledge to do it. Then fix up what needs to be fixed, and when you submit it, you know you've got predetermined objectives that you can stand with and that you can monitor throughout the year. So there is a vehicle. What we found with the department is there's a tendency on it, especially some of the entities now talking in general, when we're busy auditing, trying to audit the 13, 14 APP in January, February this year, the guys were changing 12, 13. Now we've done 12, 13, 14, but it's a lot of entities, there's been changes again to 13, 14 as we currently sit here. So that front is also, now we're becoming a consultant. And that's the danger here, is you become an auditor general, now you're going to mark your own homework. So that's why we put the emphasis on the internal audit function to do this. So there's a very fine line for us to tread in this regard. I cannot play it in equity, then I lose my credibility. It becomes difficult. To come to cut off or the what do we call it, the significance of when targets are not achieved, we've determined through in conjunction with the with FICA, the Kitab standards, and some other people at university, you look at a 20% margin. So if you achieve less than 20 or more than 20, you did not achieve more than 20% of your target, we draw attention to it. The fact of the matter is always been represented in the annual reports. We just now draw extra attention to it. Because I think the committee will agree with me, once your housekeeping is in order, we need to focus on service delivery. And that's where we need to go. On the question on irregular expenditure, non-disclosure leads to instances of matter, and now this year we got no system, so we cannot tell what it should be. On SA Express, that was exactly what was done. There was no systems in place. Therefore, we couldn't get assurance. We can go and perform and identify irregular expenditure, but we are not sure of the quantum. Our testing is on a sampling basis. So, ideally, your system should be in place to prevent and detect. You should be able to give me a number, and then I go and interrogate that number. But when you are unable to give me the number to start off with, and you don't have processes, you don't have the paperwork, you know, for me to go and re-perform and find out what there isn't, is a very difficult situation. I'm an auditor by nature. I work according to history, and I work according to documents that you provide me. If you yourself are not comfortable with what you got, it makes life very, very difficult for me. So therefore, in SA Express, we did express a qualified audit opinion on the disclosure of irregular expenditure. We also, the directors disclosed that they didn't have systems in place, and we also emphasized that and showed the directors themselves that they're not comfortable with this, and then also in supply and environment, we noted the irregularities that was, or the problems that we had with the procurement environment. So that is the process that we followed. I don't know if that one covers that question. On DPE, just see if I know not, the proper recruiting and what type of intervention are we planning. Once again, we make recommendations to the entity. We ask the entity then to monitor it through the accounting officer, because the accounting officer is required to also monitor all these actions. On a quarterly basis, we sit with the evidence provided by us to management and internal audit and our interactions on the action plan, and we do our quarterly dashboard, which is basically this colour at the end on page 53, which we discussed with the minister and accounting officer. We see some improvement, we don't see some improvement. But the main focus of this lies with the department, and that also, if you look at the recommendation that we've made to the minister and that the minister made to the entity, is that internal audit should be your first stop. Internal audit should verify whether that actions are done. They are independent from the management of the entity, so they are your first stop. For management themselves, for the audit committee, and for yourself, that should be the first stop. They must verify. If someone says they've done something, they come in and see whether the evidence agrees with it. It worked very well in most of the entities that they verify whether these actions have been implemented. I think the challenge is having the action plans addressing what went wrong. On this, I've had one of my departments that prepared a year-end financial preparation plan, where they said that from this day, this is what we start. We're going to do the following things. We're going to do by this date, we're going to have that done. By this date, we're going to do the report. And then they share it with everybody in the entity. The financial statements with, I think the CFO will agree, is a long gone past where, you know, we as auditor come in and I sit with the CFO and his team and we sit there for 3 weeks and we've done and dusted and we walk out there. With our focus in it, with the compliance rules and regulations, the treaty terms of objectives, we touch everybody's life in the entity. And we need that, you know, you need the buy-in from everyone in your entity into the year-end process. That should be well known upfront. What are we going to do? What do we need from which person so that we get all the input timely to get that right. On record keeping here, during the audit we had a huge tunnel verifying the predetermined objectives in the DPE. At the very late stage we met with the DG and we indicated to him that we're looking at a very harsh audit opinion on predetermined objectives if we had to express one. The DG intervened in literally a day. We were able to find all the information that we required. So that's also why we raised this issue on record keeping. The information should be available at hand. So at the end of the day, it was solved. I think we went through the DG personal collection document out of the office, and everything was there. But we had to ask, I think, two or three times to get this documentation, and that's not the way it should be. So that's why we raise this as an area of concern to us. It needs intervention, but I think the intervention has happened already. Then the question of how does the portfolio committee oversight if no annual report? I think I'm in the same boat. I cannot report on something that I haven't seen the result. I think if the committee feels the necessity, once the report of SIA becomes available, we can do a shorter version of this document on the SIA report and come and brief the committee if required. We are also limited to what's published in the tabled in Parliament. Once it becomes a public document, otherwise they can take it to work and put our confidentiality agreements that we've got with the entity. If we look at the in terms of our audit engagement, you sign an agreement with a client that keeps up certain confidentiality levels. Once it becomes a table document, the results become public, and we can discuss it. Usually, I think the portfolio committee is a public committee. It's done before press and it's done before other entities. So releasing that information before then, unless specifically requested by the committee, we are not allowed to do that. I think the committee's power through the constitution allows it to request any information from anybody at any time.
Thank you for that. We will consider and when the SIA report comes, we will consider this.
Then on, I'm going to do the two questions together on the material adjustments to AOPO and supply chain management. As part of the process, the PSMA requires you to keep full accounting records, accurate accounting records on predetermined registers and annual financial statements. So that is why in most instances where we as auditors identify issues, and then there are adjustments made, raise that issue. So that the portfolio committees itself, the lodestars, the governance, the oversight bodies are aware that these financial statements were correct. Our main concern is, you know, you're taking decisions on information that might not have necessarily been a true reflection at the time when you took the decision, because you didn't have the accurate figure. As part of the audit process, as part of any audit process, you are allowed, the auditors identify errors. Now, what we do in our methodology is usually, if I do a sample and usually test on a sample basis, I take 30 items and I find that 30 are wrong. We take management, go back and investigate the entire population making up this amount. And go and see if you can find any similar errors. So we don't allow management to just adjust the 3 items because we test it on a sample basis. You're supposed to go back through a process and interrogate that information to make sure that information is correct. Then they are allowed to adjust it. We go back and we retest. So we go do more work on this environment to then see if that amount is then correctly stated. So as part of the process, they are allowed to make adjustments to their financial statements. The rules are, or our rules say, however, if we pick it up as an auditor, we're going to mention it. We're going to mention that there is material adjustments to the reasons of the financial statements so that you can make the decision and implement the necessary oversight. So yes, audit process does allow for it. But the PSMA requires the people that to be accurate from day one. Now, instances where you can sort of, I don't say get around it, but work to the benefit of both entities is where you push back your date of submission or having your financial information ready, the auditors can come in at the earlier stage and do a lot more work and interrogate it before you finalize your work on the 31st of May for submission, which then reduces the error rate. I think that is where Transnet and the ESCOMs and even Nexa and other portfolio come in. That's what they do, is they push a lot of work forward. And so you come in earlier for work, and by the time they submit, their submission is fairly correct. It is seems to be almost 100% correct. So that's where we also say the early disciplines, doing your quarterly disciplines, pushing your financial period earlier. It's a mindset change. It's a human change management issue that we need to address. It can be done. It's just getting everybody to buy it. Because we got a law that says I must do it by the 31st, I will do it by the 31st. That's unfortunately how we operate as human beings. in the portfolio committee? How do we put pressure on fixing these? I think, as we indicated, the portfolio committee is entitled to receive any information that requests on the entity. I think the challenge is just requesting it in the correct format. Now, as with the minister asking the entity to prepare action plans on how they're going to address it and being audited by internal audit, I see no reason why the portfolio committees cannot have access or privy to these documents for monitoring purposes to see how the actions are being achieved. But from our side, like I said, we look at it and we tend to monitor the areas. We do not conduct the audits in our quarterly assessments. We go much of what internal audit is telling us and what management is telling us and what we can see is happening in the entity. And then at the end, unfortunately, I'll be your confirmer. But then, don't report that internal audit verifies into the minister could be a very valuable source to the portfolio committee on how the actions are achieved. On staff call for submitting late. I think with the issue with the biological asset, that they were still busy trying to ascertain the value of it. That was only finalized or determined at a very late stage. So that's why the entity then submitted their financial statements. Like, how I usually say is you can choose. There's basically two evils there, or two evils that you're gonna find yourself guilty of. Either you can comply with the legislative deadline and you're going to have material adjustments before you're unsure of what you've got, or you must take a stand and decide, I'm going to take more time and present you with a much better set of financial statements. So then hopefully that information should be free and fair of misstatements, which in Sasco's case still wasn't, which is ironic. You know, if you take the punishment on one, make sure that the rest of the stuff is clean. But that's not the way the cookie crumbles this year. I've addressed the question on how we allow people to change if they submitted financial statements. Also on the recommendations, do we monitor and the process followed? I think I've answered your question, Chairperson, through my previous question. Then also on the intervention required, what is our role? Is we have quarterly meetings and quarterly interactions with the accounting officers, the audit committee members, and we, I think in some of the entities, we've seen it at DPE, I've handed over the quarterly dashboard to internal audit to do. Boy, are they strict. It's a beautiful example of where it worked very well. Management has taken a very critical look at themselves and reported on it, I think, much to the CFO's dismay. When we talked about this document this minute, but it's refreshing to see. If you are worried about something, why not raise it as an issue and keep it on your radar? So we take that quarterly document, we discuss it with management, we discuss it with the accounting officer, and that's how we try and monitor this process to make sure that the corrective actions happen and take place and are taken care of as they should. Like I said, the internal audit has proven invaluable tool in the case of PPE. They say the process over. They're there every single day. They verify the action plan. So they've got a very good idea of what's going on. So that's a very, very good example of how to do it right. One question on the legal status regarding Alex Court, I think I've addressed that in my previous response. On the triple PFA, previously the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act was not applicable to entities. Schedule 2 entities, specifically as all of these state-owned companies fall in. The guidance there from National Treasury is you need to have a procurement policy, and then we measure you when we audit you against that procurement policy. The issue with the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, it differs in some instances vastly from what you might have done in the past. Because a lot of these entities have overseas suppliers and things like that, I think that's the reason why we stepped away from the triple PFA and put it on ice at the applicability of these entities. But the triple PFA is very prescriptive about the steps that you need to follow. So it's a complex process that says if you advertise something above R1 million, you must evaluate the guy, you must have functionality criteria. How am I going to evaluate your product? You must specify it up front in your tender document. It must be known to everybody. How are we going to evaluate your triple BEE, your economic empowerment? How am I going to evaluate your tax matters? You must do certain compliances. All these are done to protect the state and to promote free, equitable, and transparent procurement processes. So it's a moving away of we've done some things in the past like this, and this is the way we know to do it, to having a new system in place to roll out. It's like what you said, you're going to have a regular replenish policy at SA Express, you roll it out, you tell the people who changes your procurement processes, you draw a line in the sand, from this onwards you start to procure according to the Differential Procurement Policy Framework Act. There's certain documents that you must include, there's certain standard regulations that you must in place, and these have all been brought into place to protect government. And then once again, once you've got this in place and you're procuring now like a champion, make sure that you manage your contacts with the service providers, that they don't milk you and they don't take advantage of you. So that's the main difference between what they had in the past and the new implications of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. It is a large and cumbersome document. The challenge is staying up to date with also the changes that come through on the website. National Treasury has now moved into a role like SARS, where as soon as there are challenges on legislation or issues come through that the court process, they change the guidance provided and they provide you with updates on that. So it's not only the initial challenge of meeting everything that's come up now, but also staying up to date with the entities. And National Treasury publishes all the requirements on their website. And at all the entities that I've been involved in, National Treasury is also willing to help. So they will get involved and they will help you into getting your processes and getting your policies aligned to the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework. So that's also a very nice strategic partner to have. But I think I won't advise for every single entity to go to National Treasury. They probably have to establish a committee between them and discuss this as our common issues and these are the common issues to National Treasury to assist us and how we're going to take this forward. Chairperson, and I think that is all the questions.
Any other questions? Additional questions?
But if I could just ask, you know, talking about the dashboard, my concern is the following of the targets and, you know, up as the other side role. The DDE have what we were very impressed with, and that is their dashboard for following things. How have you found that, because now you're talking here about the minister, you know, coming here with the key commitments by the minister, and a lot of that is reporting and follow up on things. Does that dashboard not cover? Obviously it's inadequate, but have you looked at that dashboard and how that operates and the adequacy on it?
Thank you, Chairperson. I know the member could see from the surprise on my face. It's the first time I've heard about the dashboard, but we will go back and interrogate it.
Okay. I'm going to ask the department. There's nothing new for you. You know all the things, I assume. You've discussed it. So if from the department side, anything from your side?
Thank you, Jay. I just wanted to send you a note. I think that from the department you know about the things that engage you, they come to the department to present to the minister, to present to the DG, and we are taking the issues quite seriously from our side. I think that there are operational issues, there are strategic issues that we need to deal with the department. Sometimes the issues around subcall and the land claim and the fact that we need to be proactive with the department in how we have the matter so that it doesn't turn like Alexco, because right now Alexco is not a good model of a community and a partnership. It's creating lots of challenges for us. So it's issues that we are keeping our eye on. The issue of, I think what we've also taken out of the AG is that we have an oversight role as a department, and we have probably in the past not played a critical role in oversight in monitoring the audit outcome, of course, because they were not monitored by AG, maybe the department did not give much attention on that space. It's one of the discussions we're having on how do we monitor, and working with the DOOs and working with the CFOs of the entities themselves, because you see that the most entities, financial management is held by CFOs, then there's performance management, then performance information management aspect of it, which will be handled by COOs or some official delegated at an executive level where they work in the overall institution. So we put in place mechanisms of working together on those things. I think we take the idea AG is raising around considering a series of training for the SOCs, because one of the issues they've raised with us is that the audit by AG took them by surprise. They were not ready. I think SAPOL actually said that very clearly, that they were not ready and they were shocked. It was a shock in their system because of the issues that the AG looked at, and etc. So the issue about troop PSA training and PSMA training are issues we need to take into our program. They have raised issues about troop PSA in most of them, which the department is also engaging with the National Center. And I've seen that, I don't know if it's in the program of the committee to actually have an engagement at this stage. The desk for monitoring, which is MUGO, is there. It's a technology solution. It has some teething problems right now. We have reviewed it. We want to strengthen it on certain aspects of the technology that we are using in respect to that. From the DDE side, the issue of record keeping, particularly which is rare, is an issue as well we have given attention to, because we have the monitoring and evaluation unit. I think what has happened is that people have significantly relied, they thought the audit would be handled by finance and our monitoring and evaluation unit without the involvement of other people. And so there were issues regarding how we coordinate efforts internally in the department. We raised the profile, we continue to raise the profile on that issue. I think lastly, the one of the case 32 situations in my view is the whole issue about the predetermined objectives. I know that SDP, after we got a report from AG regarding 12-13 financially and the issues around some of the objectives which were not smart, which I agree some of them were not smart, so it was difficult to quantify, etc. We went back to our 2014 annual report, something which we accept the AG obviously, because in the middle of the financial year we had to pick up the lessons that we got from the audit and see how we can improve. One of the things we've been careful about is that we must not reduce the commitments that we've made, because these commitments were approved in Parliament, etc. But how do we sharpen the wording such that we're able to be very clear? Just yesterday, I made an example here about something like the PSMA applications which must be signed by the minister, approved by the minister. So with the AG, even if it's done, signed by the DG, as long as it's not signed by the minister, it's not recognized as being achieved. So we have to look at the wording and see how we deal with those issues internally. So we're working hard towards clearing these issues. And I know that sometime in November, we're having a session in the resources to basically just get a feedback from them on how far they are on the issues that the AG has raised. And we will be inviting the AG also to that meeting, because all the resources must come and report and we must engage on these issues. But they are all different, they are all different. So we can only support them and they are aware of it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That was a more comment. If you want to respond to all that, would you? We don't need to go into the review now.
Yes, thank you.
Anybody else? Can we then, on behalf of the committee, thank you so much for a very important presentation. This is always the highlight for us. We have the auditors general before this committee. To learn, to see what you're doing, and we wish you well in your endeavors. And the sterling work that you guys are doing. Especially in the
DD and social companies. Tipperson, I know I've actually passed my moment. If I can make four comments. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity. We're busy in the process of finalizing our new general report on the audit outcomes. I think a presentation has been done to Parliament by Terence or the Tipperson Committee. The four issues that come out throughout government, and it might not necessarily be, or three issues that come out in government, not necessarily applicable to the portfolio that we see common thread in, is a lack of action. You know, when something is continuously wrong, and you allow it to continue, you may have the same result. The other one is vacancies in key positions and key staff, that you need to fill those very critically, and that you look at. I think we had a meeting with the minister of another portfolio, where the minister indicated that she sat in on interviews for another portfolio, and they had six candidates that they couldn't place. Yet her portfolio at that stage didn't have CEOs in critical positions. Now you need to leverage on these opportunities. You think six wonderful candidates that you can't place in that portfolio, take them, put them in your portfolio. And the other one is lack of consequences. So it's slow response to finding a lack of consequences that we find in general in government that remains issues. So that are, if we call it our silver bullets, or the areas that we need to be focused on.
Thank you. That is issue. From our experience, we can confirm that is a silver spoon. That is a good guidance to have. And we will endeavor to do it in our portfolio as well. Can we... Can we excuse the Auditor General? Thank you so much for your presence. We have the department is also. Can we have a 2 minute break?
You might. As long as you don't ask me to leave you your minute.
Basically, that's the manager of the committee there. And then 1.2 is the description of the core functions of the department. That's to what the department has its responsibility, which will be stress and development, vitality and transformation. And then the purpose of the principle are as mandated by the manifold amendment procedure in legislative act, which fund the also. And then the method, basically, we the information we put in here is information that we get, came out of our briefings that we had in the work of committed departments and the entities over the year, the oversight visits, and the interaction with the 11 stakeholders during our visits and our interaction with the general. And then these are just the outlines of the content of the report, which is the report actually has the key relevant policy focus area that you have drawn for, the financial performance recommendations of the committee, of the previous findings in terms of the BRRR and the BRRR report, and the assessment of service delivery performance of the department, the finances and service delivery performance assessment, committee observations, and summary of reporting requirements, and committee recommendations at the end. And in that order, summarize them, but as I said, it's a working document. Number two is the overview of the key 11 policy areas, which derived from the State of the Nation Act by the Minister, the NDP, and other policy documents as they relate to infrastructure and the role of the department and state-owned companies in the main Eskom and Transnet. And then we've got outcome-based approach, which is the first civil delivery agreement covered between the minister and the president, which relates to ensuring that there's a level generation, distribution, and transmission of electricity. And then we just highlight as to what Eskom has done in terms of that. And then one of ensuring the maintenance and specific function of our roads and rail network. We just highlight to how much time we're spending over the years and what problems there. So there are some other things that we're going to add from the committee as we engage with the report to see that what we must add with the gas Eskom, what can we add with the gas Transnet. And then there's an issue of one of the other targets for the department to expand access to information and communication technology. And then here we engage as to what the challenges of how the FACO is and what their mandate is and how the department is moving to that. And as different employment and through inclusive growth, how the SOCs are going to move that through reindustrialization. Yes, how the SOCs assess the department directly there. And then in terms of rural development also, how the department does that to state-owned companies. And then here is an overview of the revised plan and annual performance plan, including the key changes to the 2013 and 2014 annual report. Just a few highlights with regards to the capital investment, what happened at SAA in terms of the LCTS and things like that. And then the page 7 is the overview of key development in the organizational and service delivery environment of the department. As we see that there's no changes in the structure of the department from the last financial year. And then the issues were in the last financial year was regarding the filling of vacancies and the retention of critical skills and senior management. But now the summary, number 3, this is the summary of the previous key financial performance recommendations of the committee. And what the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Enterprises responded to those recommendations. So you'll see that in 2.1, our first recommendations of 2013 will be that the Minister, this is what we had actually recommended last year. That the Minister, for example, has ensured that emphasis be placed in the monitoring of LCC implementation, government policy objectives is realized, especially their outcomes as they have an impact on people's lives. And then on the next page, this is a response from to the Minister of Finance that to consider funding the critical vacant position in the department. In terms of skills, the required skills over there. And then the first one, the department's response. in terms of our recommendation that we've made to them, and then why is the work of the Minister of Finance response, of which was the concept of the Minister of Finance fund the vacant code that we had requested that it is not funding. And then the Minister of Finance crisis response is also not there. And then people put this only with the a summary of our recommendations for the budget vote report for 2013-2014. And our concern mainly was regarding the infallibility then around SAA in the process of SAA and them. And then also the possibility of board members that the committee raised that they must need to visit state owned companies in order to do certain challenges and engage with stakeholders, customers and things like those. And then because number 10 is the overview assessment of financial performance. Yeah. So the table there deals with
this is just regarding the financial performance for the 2012-13. So basically it's talking about the department in 99% of their budget and it's an unqualified audit. Then 4.2 goes into more detail regarding the department spend for 12-13, and then we look at per quarter spending. Then on page 11, we look at again goal 12-13 spending like per program and how the department spent it per program. And then we look at the Auditor General's report and what the audit opinion was. You might have to add maybe a few things from what Gordon just said now, so we'll just add something there. And then we look at the entities. Here we're just looking at basically audit outcomes for the entities and any issues that might be highlighted with regards to the financials. Okay, so then a couple of across all of that. So page 4.3, page 16. Then 4.3, we look at current spending for the first quarter. We have to give information regarding the second quarter, which must all put in there. And then after that, we look at the 2014-15 MTN allocations, which is as per the EAD document at the moment, which still needs to be confirmed during the MTN process.
Okay, and then we've got concluding remarks, comments on the financial performance. And then on 5, we've got an overview and assessment of service delivery performance in terms of how the department has done in terms of their key performance areas. But obviously, coming from the annual report that was tabled yesterday and discussions that have taken place, and also the Auditor General's comments, it will also be amended to ensure that we inculcate all these other issues into the report. And then the annual performance plan, total number of targets, and total number achieved. That's a highlight that out of the issue one, only two, the department only was not able to achieve 26 out of the 81 that was being, which is 32%. So if there's any other issue that the committee will be taking in terms of recommendation when it happens, that's going to be what is going to be put into the report. And then the program performance, first program, in terms of service delivery, we have just given a summary of each of them. And then on page, that goes up until page 21, which is the key reported achievement. We'll probably have to also feel the key achievement, but it gives different entities. So probably have to make sure that we put them through when you read them, you know that they were dealing with Daniel, Alex Cole, because we're trying to touch on every entity as to how they have performed in terms of achieving their key performance areas. Yeah. And then in terms of the reported challenges, we have brought in the issues of the reduced power station and its challenges. Some of the information comes from our oversight that we have taken during the year. And then also the issue of the ECS license as Department of Infarco being a challenge for the entity to successfully deliver its mandate. There's an LPMP issue that the support that is required in terms of staff and property national response of procurement staff. And then staff call issues with regards to the length, the Lincolns and uncertainty going forward. The SAA issues with respect to the losses that they have seen and the end of the comments that the department said, and it is in view of their implementing the LGTF, and then other sort of delivered performance findings, 5.2. This one basically gives a summary of all the oversight visits were taken, the committee taken oversight visits in the administration system of Australia and the minister in the 14th part, to Genel, Overbear, PMP, Transport Port of Durban, Port of Cape Town, Port of Ghana, Rail Engineering, Port River and Kuru Spur, and for certain airways and for certain airways which means the board. Also that we have just a few, some of the other things, we're just highlighting a few issues in terms of the Mizuki power station, and then we've met with the SAA and the federal police, and then they have actually tabled a LGTF since the last, our last visit to them, and then the governance problem, and the issues that we had with the Mizuki power station, which just led to the delays and unrest. Then we're also interacted with the labor, organized labor during our visit, local businesses, contractors, and then we had some of the issues that some of the things that there was a lack of promotion and support to local businesses about the Farzana, the fraudulent behavior and underperformance by some contractors at the Mizuki power station. And then we'll still expand more on this. And then the 11th research assessing performance of the department. This is just some of the reported information or output that has been reported. And then 5.3 is concluding comment on service delivery performance. And then finance and service delivery performance assessment as to how the department is spending its money. That is spent in the 3.99.3% in the last financial year. And then for this year, there are some which the information that has been tabled in the prior thing. And then 7 is the important one, which is the committee observations and responses, if there is any, which it needs to be addressed in terms of technical issues, the governance and operational issues, sort of delivery performance, and the financial performance and including funding proposals. We have just highlighted some of them, which is the issue of the reporting of performance information on the annual report is a concern and it does not align with performance management information as the AD has reported now that, that we cannot assess the department because it's not quantified like KPA. And then the governance issues that we have highlighted, that we like members to go through the recommendations and get more in terms of observations. And also out of our meeting yesterday and the meeting today, we are going to add those comments into the report and send it out to members. And then we are also to have a summary of reporting requests. This is from, this one here is the one that was taken from yesterday's meeting. Yeah, the meeting yesterday was the department. Yeah, and then recommendations, we haven't included anything, the committee during our discussion, we have to see what kind of recommendations do we make from the department out of all the reports we got from the AG and the department.
Can I make two comments? One, there is a template. And members were trained on this one, the previous course. We went through a training session. And the template they gave to us, and the template that is here, is not necessarily the same. And we asked just to look at the template, whatever template is, the correct one, that we follow that template. That's the first one. And so for instance, the committee observations should be paragraph 7 on page 26 could be key findings. So first of all, let us just make sure that we follow the proper template, number one. Number two, this is for your information, and we will mandate the researcher, a content advisor, to finalize the report. And when it's finalized, we come back to this room. Can we agree on that? So I'm not going to open up for discussion. Robin?
Well, in terms of the template, the way amendments to the template that was used, I think there was one that was provided to members, and then when I referred to the one, we'll make it available for all the members to see in terms of how. But then the report basically deals with the mandate of the committee on introduction and the scope of work that the committee does, and followed by the section that deals with the policy overview. If you want to see certain policy articulation, that section, second section, will have to deal with that in its detail. So also trying to see in terms of how the government performs in terms of their commitment to the presidency's delivery and the agreement, so the delivery agreement signed by the minister. Then three, the regulator summarizes the financial performance, and then also explains in detail to see how far the department been allocated. These are things that were discussed yesterday by the DG and today in terms of how the allocations of all and the changes that are created within the department. And then the third part deals with the service delivery environment, which I think came out of the observations of the community and also the announcements and the interactions that the committee has had with the department. And lastly, I think those are some of the things that it will be the those key findings from the committee. The committee must give us a certain put forward in terms of what we're finding, and we're putting requests and other requests. I just brought the expectations from the Auditor General, from institutions that have worked with the department, in terms of how and when are they requested. And the last one would have to deal with the recommendation. I think one area is the recommendation on financial performance. And then the second one is the one that deals with the service delivery environment. So that is the recommendation annually to the minister, the department, the minister of finance. So those are some of the things that I think we have to do.
Can we agree on that? We will standardize the template. We will include the things that we can observe now. We just received a valuable input from the audit agenda, not only on the department, but all the set of entities that we can add, and then we will come back to the committee. Okay? Can we close this matter?
Just ask one question. Does that mean that we're going to go by what we've had now, because it was a pretty thorough report on the entity, instead of waiting now for any input from the individual entity that they have here?
Thank you so much, and thank you for the researcher content and the honorable Quena, honorable Quena, for your contribution. We go to the last point. We have 6 minutes, and I assume every member has got 3 minutes on the microphone. 11 June, page 1. Will you hear us? Will you ask them? Does anybody know about the Honourable Ambrosini?
I actually saw him the other day, he looked quite good. He was here.
Mm-hmm.
He was here doing with the petition of state information, a briefing on it. He looked a lot better, but he looked okay.
Page 1? No, I'm giving yours open.
Okay. This one is the presidential report, ne? On the presidential review committee.
Can we go page by page?
Yeah. Page 2.
Just on page 1. It's page 1 and make a comment. On page 1, the guests, there were 2 guests. 3 guests. And I only see 3 here. If I remember correctly, there were 3 people. It was the there was another gentleman, also from the president.
Please talk. Page 3.
The second report is the 18th of June, 7 minutes. Yeah. 8th of June was the by the problem between the second defense of funds. There we had Transnet and the chairperson of the PSDF. page 2 of the thing is a summary of the presentation that has been made in terms of progress we made. It includes the activities Transnet reports your take to have made since November 2011 when our report was taken. And then point 2 is the activities that the TSDF since November 2011 that they have made out of bonus system. And then 2.6 is with the improved pensioner benefits as reported by Transnet. Yeah, and then the observations that have been made of the committee.
Can I have a pages? Page 1. Any comments? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4.
Yeah, Chair.
Just
in the conclusion.
That's paragraph 5.
Yeah, paragraph 5, because that is our recommendation.
Sorry.
I think we've left it exceptionally vague, because a lot more was said at that meeting than simply the committee welcomed and acknowledged work that was being done. We also said at the time that we wanted more information going out to the pensioners, especially regarding the 2% increase. I specifically said that when we ended the meeting. I said people have to understand what is going on. We also said that we wanted...
Just before you go,
yeah.
That 2%, either, I can't find it, but I'll start now.
Yes, it says.
But it says within 2 months.
Yeah, it says, but we said we wanted the pensioners to get a report back on that.
Okay. It's a communication.
Yeah.
We
said it's nothing that we know about it, we want the pensioners to know about it.
Yeah, so the recommendation, discuss it, that the two pension funds should communicate with pensioners with regard to the four matters that are relating to them, including the
2%. Okay. That's all I wanted, because it's just too vague saying that we congratulated them on their work. I said we didn't congratulate them on their work. Maybe I mean that this. But I wanted a lot more communication going out to the pensioners.
It is better for
you.
Okay. I propose to be accepted. Honourable Foreman, Honourable Queen. So it's true. The next item on the agenda is good.
I have a voice on
I'm going to go to the hospital.
I'm thinking this way.